Welcome everyone to Know Thy Brand podcast, the branding podcast for women in business. Welcome everybody to Know Thy Brand podcast, a podcast that tackles gender inequality through the brand lens. From brand strategies to marketing tactics, from female leadership to female entrepreneurship, from corporate brand to personal brand, every episode is designed to inspire you and to support you in a journey for success, whatever success means to you. Hi, everyone. Today we have with us John. John is based in Sweden and is an expert in all things branding, from strategy to design to communicating your brand. John is the man for you. John has been introduced to me by Kevin, that was one of our guests in the previous episodes, and he couldn't just stop praising John for his qualities and experience in branding, despite the fact that you seem very young. So I couldn't wait to have you on our podcast. Thank you for joining us, John.
Thank you so much for having me, Julia. It's great to be here.
So can you give us a little bit of background about you and your expertise? Where do you come from? What do you do?
Sure. Yeah. So first of all, yeah, I am pretty young. I suppose I'm 24, almost 25 years old.
Really?
Yeah. Baby, I guess is how I would describe it. And I do that through my own brand consultancy, which is called Cult Method, where, I do everything, like you said, from leading brand strategy workshops, writing messaging or copy, sometimes coming up with brand names for people, designing logos, visual identities, and, every now and then building the occasional website here and there. So that's really my bread and butter. In the past, I guess, year or two, I've also been getting into the content marketing space. I've co-founded two content websites, which is basically, websites that, generate revenue through advertising, affiliate marketing, that sort of thing. One is in the home gardening niche, and the other one is in the snorkeling and water sports space. So those consume less of my time, but, they're kind of an opportunity for me to have a playground where I can, put all of my marketing and design chops to the test with, actual skin in the game, which is very important to me. Overall, I've been a designer for the past 5.5, maybe 6 years or so. I've been running my own businesses full time since 2017, which is when I dropped out of college. That's kind of the professional side of things, I suppose. On the personal side of things, I was born and raised here in Sweden. I still live here. I'm a pretty boring guy. I like to travel, go to church, love to read books. I keep meaning to get into tennis, but I never get around to actually, doing it consistently. So yeah, it's a little bit about me.
Thank you so much. I love the fact that you say you're boring. Like, we've been chatting and I have basically been laughing since we started the conversation. So I wouldn't really define boring. And the tennis, yeah, I have the same problem. I've given up now. I'm much older than you. And after years of trying and failing at keeping up with tennis, I decided that I'll just invest in my children tennis rather than mine.
Right on.
But I think you have a very impressive curriculum. And personally, as I was telling you, and as my audience know, I'm a teacher at university. And some people get a bit scared of talking with young people because there's this expectation that you have to have worked for 30 years before anybody should be actually listening to you because you didn't have the experience. And I think that's a very silly, to use a nice word, approach, because actually young people bring to the table so much. We have been doing the work the same way, day in, day out for the past, in my case, 18 years. It's it's good to have fresh ideas. And someone that is so dedicated, the fact that you started your own business in 2017, you need to make it work. So you are the one that, as you say, you have a playground, you experiment, you try new things. And what works, then you bring it to your clients. And today you bring it to us. And I'm really, really grateful for that. Thank you so much.
Well, I'm excited to be here.
So I want to start our conversation from brand strategy. We covered it already with Kevin, so I don't want to go too much in depth with that, but it's very important for the audience, especially if they haven't listened to the podcast with the episode with Kevin, to understand what the brand strategy is. Because most often than not, people come, I run a branding consultancy, so they come to me and say, hey, I need help with my brand. Yes, what? I need a logo. Okay. We will talk about the logo in a second, but before we talk about the logo, what is branding? What is a brand strategy in your words and what you see with your clients?
Sure. Great question. And I think to answer that, first, we really have to know what branding is, right? Because that, like you mentioned, that's not a given either. A lot of people think it's just your logo and that's it, right? But branding, at least to me, is basically just the conscious, intentional process of shaping people's perceptions about your company, right? And so then brand strategy is the attempt to answer two important questions, which are, you know, how do we want to be perceived as a company? And then how do we make it so? And the reason, of course, that matters is that it, you know, feeds directly into everything that you do, you know, from the copy you write for your website, the way you use your logo, the colors that you use in your visual identity, to, you know, how and where you advertise your products or services, you know, even which products or services you offer and at what price point, and, you know, what wrapped in what sort of customer experience. So I think that's really why brand strategy matters, is it helps provide answers to those questions. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. I actually enlarge that and say, actually, branding also go to impact things like the people you take on board with you, the supplier you choose, the clients you choose, because you might decide not to work with specific clients because they're not aligned with your brand. You don't want them to have a negative impact on the perception that the rest of your audience can have about you.
Right.
I went through your blog post, you know, before this interview, because I wanted to understand a bit more. And I saw that in one article, you listed the three very important effects of having a strong brand. Now, I'm getting you completely out of the blue. I don't know if you remember them, but...
No, I don't.
I thought they were brilliant. You really very nicely summarized what are the benefits. One is obviously to stand out from the competition, to be memorable for your audience, because they understand who you are.
Right.
And then I love the fact that you mentioned you can set your own price.
Yeah.
And why is that? Can you tell us about it? Do you remember why you wrote about it?
Well, I actually...
It's so cheeky on me, because I should have told you that.
Yeah, very cheeky.
But just because as you were talking about it, I remember exactly what you were saying in that article. Mm. So, you know, you have this ability to convey messages very easily in a very, you know, direct manner. And so it reminded me all of a sudden of the things you were talking.
Sure. Well, I appreciate that. And I actually, I have no idea which blog post you're referring to. I've got a few of them on there.
Of course.
But yeah, I guess the reason why you're able to set your own prices is because of the strategic differentiation that a strong brand will help establish for you, right? And if you are, you know, meaningfully different and obviously different in the eyes of your potential customers, that kind of helps you. It decreases the amount of competition that you're facing, right? Because people aren't comparing you to everybody else. Hopefully they're, you know, there might just be you that's doing the things that you're well known for, right? And so then it's really just a matter of, you know, set your own prices, right? But even if you're just a little bit different from people, or significantly different from a lot of the companies in your market, that, you know, really limits the pool of competitors that you need to worry about.
I agree completely. Like, I always work with my clients on the negative buyer persona, because everybody thinks, oh, I need to have everyone. Like, who do you want to reach out? When you do the first exercise on buyer persona, men and woman, age 18 to 100, lives everywhere in the world. And you're like, okay, yeah, that's okay. But realistically speaking, you need to really find your niche and need, oh, whatever makes you special. And I agree with you that the thing about price is that if you enter in the market, and this podcast is specifically for startups, also for business owners of small, medium size, but especially if you're a startup and you think to enter the market just offering a cheaper price,
right,
that is not going to cut it through. It's not going to be the, you know, you will always have someone that's cheaper. We're saying that the same with Kevin. There's always been someone that's cheaper, someone that is faster. So what is really the differentiator? And that is your brand. Mm-hmm. So, having established that if you are a company, the first thing you do, you should invest in your strategic brand and really define what your unique value is, something that really sticks with your audience and makes you different from your competitors and allows you to set your own prices.
Yep.
We can then start working on our brand identity or visual identity. Now, you are an expert in this field. And I quote you here. Mm-hmm. You said, your logo is the biggest job. Your logo's biggest job is to visually represent your brand. And different types of logos communicate different information about your brand identity. What's so important about it?
Right. Well, that's a really good question. And I think, you know, just taking a step back first, thinking about the purpose of a logo, right? I think I said, you know, it's to visually represent your brand. Well, what does that actually mean? You know, sometimes I think we as designers especially put far too much stock into logo designs. You know, when I talk to graphic designers, that's all they ever talk about, right, is the logo and how important that is to branding. And they kind of equate the logo with your brand. And, you know, even just looking at a brand's visual identity, there's so much more to it than just the logo, right? The logo is really just one piece out of many.
Absolutely.
But then, you know, I look at some of the businesses here in my area, or, you know, some of the competitors of my clients, and, you know, I immediately reconsider. The truth is that a tacky looking logo or a cheap looking logo, it makes your whole business seem tacky, right? And then on the flip side of that is a professional looking logo will, you know, it will get people to take you seriously. So there's kind of what I consider to be the importance or the relevance of logo design, right? It's to set that first impression and to tell people a little bit about what they can expect from, you know, doing business with your company. Course,
can I just add, sorry, sure. Can I just add one thing? Because with Kevin, we're saying at the very start, don't worry about investing in too much in the logo.
Yes.
And I think that is a good idea in a sense that when you're at the very start and you're still working on your brand and you're still finding yourself, I think it is not as important to because as you say, it's the visual representation of your brand. So you first really need to get your brand strategy, you know,
to know
who you are. I don't know, in my experience, when I first started my company, the logo was type font and was very simple, but I had a purpose. I need to present it for a business case and all of that. And so that is not important. But once you really find yourself, you know, who you are and what you want to do, that's when you're going to invest. And it's really critical to have the right, to convey the right message about your company. You're not tacky, you're not cheap, you're not anything else that can be associated to a bad logo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I love that. And I always tell clients that, you know, people that come to me and they haven't really validated their business idea yet, and they want to sink, you know, $5,000, $10,000 into a logo and a visual identity, I tell them, you know, maybe it's actually more prudent not to do that. I think that until you've validated your business plan, really all you should be doing is firing up, you know, Photoshop or you know, whatever program that you might have, type out your brand name, set it in, you know, Helvetica Bold or something like that, pick out a simple color and then just, you know, stick with that until you've actually got revenue, until you're actually making money. And that's kind of when it's time to really invest into your brand identity, right? So I'm totally on board with that.
Oh, I'm so glad. Would that be a horrible imagine? No, Julia, I completely disagree with you.
Yeah.
You should invest. Right? That would be like, oh, okay. Yeah. That would make a very interesting point. I just want to pause you 1 second because you and I work in branding and we're like, yeah, I understand. But actually, we should explain for the audience. When you said you made a very good point before, visual identity is not just about logo. I don't want to go on a tangent here, but can you just list for our audience so that they can start thinking about it? What are the other elements of the visual identity that they should consider before they think they have done that part of their brand?
Right. Yeah. No, great question. I think really the visual identity is the sum total of all of the visual, tangible expressions of your brand. Right. And so in very basic terms, that's, you know, your logo, it's, you know, the color palette that you use and how those colors are combined together. Because of course, there's a lot of different ways that you can combine the same, you know, two or three colors, right? It's the typography that you use. So the typefaces or the fonts that you typeset all of your marketing materials in. It's the layouts of, you know, your Instagram posts or your brochures, etc. I think that's kind of the most basic components.
Thank you so much. Exactly. So we're not looking only at the logo. The logo is the memorable and also a bit of what is set the scene, obviously, because once you have the color for the logo, then you try. I love when clients come to me and we're working on the logo and they say, okay, can we start with the website? And I'm like, we don't know yet.
Not quite.
We can work on the, you know, on the content, yes, structure and everything. But you know, there is always this willingness to get to the market as soon as possible. And it's very sometimes I feel bad because I keep on saying to my clients, pause, yeah. Wait. But then you know, I joke, but I do the same thing. Because now that I relaunched my company as a social enterprise, I was like, I need to go. I was telling you, I was about to launch the website. And then I was like, actually, Julia, just, you know, take a second, think about it. And then we do it. Because it's natural, you know, you have a business, you want to go out, you want to find clients, you want to show to the world who you are and what you want to achieve. But sometimes taking, you know, sometimes I think not normally taking the right steps in the right order really helps to create strong foundation for the business.
Yeah, it's easy to get impatient, but I think at the end of the day, you know, sometimes you have to kind of take it slowly in order to actually make progress quickly, right?
Oh, I love that. I'm gonna quote you on this. Sure.
<It's lovely. Go ahead.
Okay, let's go back to our logo though. Mm-hmm. So you talk about different types of logo. Mm. I don't want to go too much in detail, but can you give us a little overview of what the type of logo you think of and how to choose the right one for your business?
Yeah, of course. So, you know, beyond the things that are more difficult perhaps to put a finger on, like, you know, color, shapes, typesetting, that kind of stuff, I think there are, you know, a few different types of logo, like different categories of logo types, right? And there's basically four of them. There's the word mark, which is what we talked about earlier. It's just your brand name set in a specific typeface with a specific color. And then there's the letter mark, which is kind of an abbreviated form of your brand name, but then, you know, the rest of it is the same. There's the symbol or the icon, which is what we think about, you know, with the Nike swoosh or the Apple symbol. And then there's the combination mark, which is your symbol or icon, you know, combined with your word mark, and they're always kind of displayed together, right? And I think, you know, each type has its time and place. Like the type of logo that you choose shouldn't be completely arbitrary. There should be some thought put into this because it does have, you know, strategic significance. You know, for example, a brand that's, you know, unfortunate enough to have a very long or very generic name might want to opt for a letter mark, you know, like HBO for home box office or GE for General Electric. And, you know, with time, with a Lettermark logo, the hope is that people are going to be referring to your brand as the letters in your Lettermark, as opposed to the full name, if it's a very, you know, if it's a mouthful to say. So that's, you know, a scenario in which a Lettermark might be the most appropriate choice.
I can tell you a story. I used to work for Standard Chartered Bank, which is a bit of a mouthful. And it was a constant struggle because the brand is Standard Chartered Bank and cannot be changed. But everybody calls them SE because it's faster.
Yeah.
And so we actually had to go through a long exercise of branding to define which direction to go. And the bank exists since, you know, the 19th century. So we're talking about, it's an old bank. You can't just change the name. You can't just say, you know what, I'm not going to change the name. I'm going to be SC. So we had to do a lot of research and eventually stayed and started the bank, at least when I left. They might have changed now but at that time. But it was a problem because people nobody was referring to it as a Standard Chartered Bank. Because nobody wants to say all these words. If you can just say SC.
Right.
So that's a very good point. It probably a decision at some point they will have to make, I don't know. But certainly a decision that GE made and OLG, you know, all of these companies that managed to make a decision earlier on really helped them then to fortify their image associated to the initial of their name.
Right. Yeah. Like the BBC, nobody calls it the British Broadcasting Corporation, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. But yeah, I guess overall, though, when it comes to startups and less established businesses, my general recommendation, which I think I outline in that article you referred to earlier, is to, you know, strive to just use a word mark, right? Because building, you know, letter marks aside, the alternative to a word mark is the symbol or the icon. And the problem with that, of course, is that a symbol or an icon, it's an abstraction, right? It lacks the sort of secondary, communicative property of actually containing your name, which is what a word mark does. So it becomes more difficult to kind of build that brand recognition. Whereas with a word mark, you're really, you know, killing two birds with one stone. You've got the logo and you've got the name, and it's just one thing. So if you're blessed to have a short enough name that you can use a word mark, and really preferably if you have a very short name, you will never need a secondary icon for, you know, you can just scale it down to small sizes and it'll still be legible as your social media profile picture and things like that. Of course, it's a little bit different with, I think a lot of brands tend to have not super short names. They tend to be, you know, at least, you know, 10 characters or more, I would say. And so that's where symbols and icons kind of become more relevant, especially at those smaller sizes, to be able to have something that can represent your brand even on social media.
For me, when I work with logos with my clients, I usually tend to prefer the watermark and the little icon. Like if you see the Know Their Brand, like it's a watermark, but the O is made with the female symbol. So that gives me the flexibility to use the name, but also to use the icon when relevant, like on the website, on the... But having said that, I agree with you because, you know, we are so used to just use the icon. We become so used. And sometimes you look even your own stuff and you're like, how people will ever know that this is not their brand? Like how? Or other clients. I'm like, it's easier is, you know, if using the simple icon makes it takes much less space, especially as we work a lot on visual, because now with Instagram and all of that on social media, we tend to work a lot on visual. So obviously having the little icon helps freeing the space for other visual elements. But then it's very important to be careful not forgetting the actual name of the brand, because if you're, you know, Nike can do it. Coca-Cola can even change their name and say, enjoy summer, and you will know that is Coca-Cola. But that's because they're a little bit more established than a startup or a small business or bootstrapping business. So let's try to be smart here and, you know, use what really makes, helps the business grow. Eventually,
absolutely. Yeah, I mean, Coca-Cola has a few more billion dollars to spend on marketing than your average small business.
You say, just a few.
Yeah.
Okay, so you were talking about the importance of scaling a logo or to be big. So can we talk a little bit about a few musts in logo design? And if you someone, especially when, you know, someone might not design the logo themselves, but they go to a designer. Now, we will want to wish that the designer are all amazing and incredible. But in my experience, they might be very gifted on other fields, but they might not be experienced in logos. So you end up with beautiful looking things, but you know that it will never work as a logo.
Right. It's unusable. So, yeah.
Exactly. As a logo, it can be used for anything else.
Right,
a logo. So, and then they come to you and say, can you help me? Like, okay. We have to go back to the drawing board though. If you could give, a few key points on logo design, that things that need to be done and things that need to be avoided.
Great question. I think a logo should have three basic qualities. It should be appropriate, which is to say, you know, it doesn't need to say a whole lot about what your business does, but it should be appropriate in its feeling, and it should convey something about the brand experience that you're promising to people. You're probably, like, for example, you probably don't want the logo of your restaurant to look like the logo of a tech startup, right? That's kind of setting some strange expectations in people's minds.
Although I'm going to challenge you here.
Okay.
Apple.
Go ahead.
Apple?
When
the Macintosh, they have the Apple. What was that Apple about? How did they came up with that?
That's a great question. And actually, like, the just going on a side tangent here, you mentioned designers creating things that could be used for anything but a logo. And I don't know, have you seen the very first logo design for Apple computers?
No, the very first, no.
So it's it looks like this wood carving, right? And it's Isaac Newton sitting underneath an apple tree. And it's this very detailed, elaborate thing.
Yeah, I actually did see it. You're right.
And so, of course, they didn't stick with that for for very long. Surprise, surprise. Do you think the Apple logo is feels inappropriate for a tech company?
I don't think it does. When you know the story, it makes sense.
Yeah.
But there is another thing. They had such a strong value proposition that even if they have put, a red cross on it or whatever, or just black, I think it would have worked. With the years, they changed it, obviously, and it became, you know, it's iconic now. And I personally don't have any problem with that. I think sometimes it's good to be different. There is no, you don't have all to stick to the same. In fact, I'm working with a company where all the competitors look exactly the same.
Right.
Same visual identity. So sometimes having something completely different is absolutely fine. But the problem, it goes back to this brand strategy. So if you have something different to say, you can have a logo that...
Yeah, exactly.
And Macintosh, at the time, was completely innovative. It was completely it was bringing the computer to users while, you know, the big companies were still struggled with big, heavy machines and all of that. So they had such a value proposition that people didn't really care about the logo at the time. They just cared about the fact that they could get a machine at home that was easy to use and, you know, they could do the things that before weren't imaginable.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, to your point, I actually think that the Apple logo, being that it is such a kind of, you know, it's a little bit quirky, right? To have just an apple as the logo for, you know, representing a tech company, a computer company. But I think because the Apple value proposition and what they were doing and what they are still doing was so unique and so different from anything else in the space. I think it makes perfect sense to use like a friendly kind of quirky logo as, you know, as the symbol for the Apple brand.
I couldn't agree more. So we have the rules, but like in everything, you have the general rules and then you can break them, but only if you have a good reason to break the rules. So,
right.
So I agree with you that you don't want a restaurant that looks like a tech company in principle, unless you do something.
Right. Unless the restaurant is the new Apple, right?
Exactly. Second tips or second rule?
Second principle or second quality. Your logo should also be distinctive, right? Which in other words, you know, it should just be unusual enough to actually persist in our minds and not just be, you know, you see it and then you forget it the next second. So that's the second principle, which I guess kind of, you know, goes into what we were saying before about the Apple logo being so different.
And also what we said at the very beginning about your brand being something that makes you stand out and that people recollect easily.
Yes.
Obviously something that is easy to remember visually, you know.
Absolutely.
If they convey the message, we're already 2/3 down getting the right brand out there.
Right. Yeah, 100%.
So the third principle?
Third and last. It should be simple. Your logo should be simple, which, you know, that's really just because it needs to work across so many different media, you know, digital, print, etc. And it needs to be able to scale up and down, be displayed in many different sizes on, you know, signage, as well as your social media avatar or your favicon for your website. It needs to have that flexibility. And the way that you accomplish that is by keeping things as simple as possible.
And if we talk about the big nose, like something really important not to do, do you have anything?
Yeah, let's see. I think the biggest error that a lot of companies make, you know, especially smaller companies, is to overcomplicate the logo design or to put so much stock into it that they just completely forget about all the other identity elements. Which really are just as important as the logo, if not even more so when you kind of combine them all, right? And by that, you know, I mean, like I mentioned earlier, how you use colors to build recognizability, how you use a distinct typographic style to grab attention, and, you know, so on and so forth.
And in your experience, have you ever encountered any horror story in logo design?
Wow. I mean,
without giving names.
Right. There are several that I can think of. One that's really etched into my brain, and you know, the first thing that kind of I thought of when you said that was the 2012 London Olympics logo, right? Which is this sort of abstract, you know, typesetting of 2012 on two different lines, so 20 and then 12. Of course, the problem with that and, you know, caused a lot of outrage and for years, I think both before and during the Olympic Games, was you could very easily like see some inappropriate things going on inside this logo. So that perhaps is the most memorable horror story, at least to me. I don't know. Do you have any that you?
Well, there are a few where things where you ask, how could you not see that it
right.
could be seen in a different way? If you go on my Instagram page, there are a few because they just crack me up. Like some I think are actually intentionally wrong. Like whoops, we did it wrong. Actually is intentionally that way. But then there are others that, for instance, I was working with one of my first clients, so we're talking many years ago, and they were a very premium company. They were working in finance, and they were only working with the really richest of the richest in Singapore. And everything was fantastic, like the platform they built, everything was really premium, but the logo. It was so wrong. I was like, you can't go out with this logo because, you know, it's just, it doesn't convey that premium, you know, experience that you're promising that you, and we know internally you are able to deliver, but if you're trying to attract someone else, a new person, and you ask them to give you your money, you know,
right.
And your logo looks so cheap, what we were saying before, you know, so cheap and so like, yeah, not, it really didn't convey this is a platform for people, wealthy people. It was mm-hmm. like more, you know, your Toys money exchange. Us. Yeah, but not even worse okay. than that. That would have been higher.
That would have been an upgrade.
Yeah, exactly. So, and that was again a case of someone having a brilliant idea, having everything in place, and then just rushing to the market before having actually thought through properly their brand. But that is just an example. In my experience, is an example where you're like, oh.
Right.
And then there are all the new brands, not the new brands, the old brands that are changing their logo now because they realize
that. Yeah.
Oh, thank you for saying that. So, for the audience, we brandists, obviously are obsessed about logos. So we follow all the, you know, trends. And there is now a trend between amongst the most established companies to change their logo so that they are more, well, in theory, they should be more agile, more social media. I think the goal is to be more social media
mm-hmm.
appealing.
Yeah, but all edgy, I can see, contemporary.
Yeah, all I can see, with an exception, and I don't know if you agree with that, but with the exception of Burger King, that I don't mind what they've done for their social. Oh, good. Oh, we think alike. And please, audience, know that we have not prepared. Yeah, exactly. We haven't prepared at all on this because we just follow, as every episode, we just have a conversation. So things sparks and we talk about. But they all seem to me the same. Apart from Burger King, they're all just gone flat. Like they've lost any, they all look the same.
Yeah.
Same font type, same, you know, basic outlines. It's really quite sad because.
Yeah, no, I agree completely. And I think it's the most egregious examples of this are kind of in the high-end fashion industry. And one logo that I used to love it was the Burberry logo, right? Uh-huh. With the knight on the horse.
Yeah.
And they just got rid of it. It replaced it with what looks to be, you know, like a slightly more polished version of Helvetica. And that's just like a, I don't know how old Burberry is, but it's, I believe they were founded in like the late 1800s or something.
Yeah.
Just a, you know, a 150 or so year old brand just flushed down the toilet for what? To look like every other high-end fashion brand that's done exactly the same thing.
Like everyone. Yeah. Like they all look the same. Like while Coca-Cola, you recognize it because it's Coca-Cola and it doesn't matter what you write in mm-hmm. those letters with those colors. All of these new brands, they look all the same. I was very, me personally, the one that disappointed me the most has been BMW. It was actually, I called it. I knew they were about to do it. It was thanks to my sons, because one of my sons in particular is really into brand already. I clearly have passed something. And so he loves to look at all of the brands and all of the, and so he was looking at the cars and we look at that one and I thought, oh, it looks a bit old. And then was last year they changed it and did a new one. Mm-hmm. But again, I think they've lost all of the heritage. They look like any other, you know, thing, BMW. Okay, thank you very much. Where is the, you know, it's so plain and it's a pity. We're all following the same path. It would be nice to see someone that comes with something a bit more exciting, a bit like a Burger King, but, you know, embracing the change, but in a bit of a more exciting.
More interesting ways,
Yeah, exactly. Not just follow what everyone else does. Okay, well, we are almost at the end of this conversation, and I have the last question that I ask to everyone, which is, can you tell me one brand that you like and why? And can be in any field, and it doesn't need to be about the logo, just why you like them.
Wow, okay, one brand.
Yeah,
it's a tough question. well, you know, I really like what Ryan Reynolds is doing with Mint Mobile. Yeah. Oh. They're not particularly impressive in terms of the visual identity, but in terms of just the overall branding, the market differentiation, their messaging, I think they're doing a really fantastic job. And, you know, I love watching all of their commercials, which is kind of a weird thing to say, right? But yeah, really love what Mint Mobile is doing.
Can you speak about them for those that don't, well, I know them, but you know, some might not know, I don't know if anybody knows.
Sure,
them.
Yeah. So Mint Mobile is a phone carrier in the US, and they were recently, I don't quite remember if he bought a majority stake, but the actor Ryan Reynolds recently got involved with them. And you know, he's one of the owners, or I don't know, he might be the sole owner. And just completely turn that brand around. I think in the past they were kind of, you know, smaller, lesser known phone carrier, certainly, but not much excitement around that brand. And, you know, they've been really unapologetic about pursuing the kind of lower priced segment of the market and being very aggressive in terms of pricing, but then coupling that with really creative marketing stunts, advertising campaigns, really interesting messaging. So yeah, that's the first one that comes to mind. I could go on. I really love Formula One, what they've done, you know, turning themselves into a media company, and revitalizing, you know, the Formula One brand just through online content and, yeah, being like a publishing company as opposed to just, you know, putting on these these racing events.
I watched the entire Netflix series. I mean,
oh, you did?
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm not particularly a big fan of car racing, but the series is really, I mean, it's something. You get an appreciation of that world that you not have otherwise, I think.
You know, it's funny. I'm a fan of Formula One, but I actually haven't gotten around to watching the Netflix show yet.
It's super cool. And
yeah,
now I'm like,
I've heard great things.
Yeah, I was like, oh, no, what happened? But then I'm also very sensitive. So, you know, sometimes the pilots get kicked out. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, no, he was so sweet. He looks so nice. I get really emotional about them.
Yeah,
yeah. Or others, I don't like him. But no, it's a very good, that's a very good example. Very different as well. Thank you.
And I love the visual identity that they rolled out a couple of years ago. That was really controversial when it happened, and a lot of sort of diehard Formula One fans were very upset about it. But I loved it from day one.
Can you tell us about what was the?
Yeah, so I think this happened in, let's see, would have been 2018, I think, possibly 2019, and So the Formula One logo had remained the same since, I believe, like the 80s or something. And it was this kind of, certainly looked kind of dated at that point. And I don't know that it was ever a truly great logo, just from like a technical point of view. It was difficult to scale down. Like, it didn't have that simplicity, and it was difficult to just unwieldy to use, I think, because of the way that some of the, you know, it's difficult to to describe without showing the actual logo, but it was based around this kind of negative space concept, the F and then the one, and it looked like they were moving. There were these kind of speed lines shooting out of the one.
Yeah, I remember.
And yeah, and it was just like, you know, difficult to use, I think, and quite restrictive in terms of how you could actually apply it. And so Formula One changes hands. There's a new owner. And they, one of the first things that they do is they, you know, design, develop this new visual identity. I think the whole process took like 2 years or something like that. And
2 years, that is a very important message, because they probably didn't just work on the logo, but they work on everything behind the logo so they can create a new logo that represents the new.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's one of the things that really stood out to me when they rolled it out. Like, everybody was so obsessed with the logo on its own, but then you look at you know, the applications and how the logo is extended into a whole identity system. And it was just really impressive because you could tell that they had thought about every single thing, you know, from the helmets that the drivers wear to the vehicle liveries to, marketing material, signage, et cetera. And it was this, you know, really comprehensive and holistic system. It wasn't just a logo. And so I loved it from day one, and I got into a few fights on Twitter with people who were saying not so nice things. Yeah.
I avoided the fights on Twitter as much as I can, if I can. I don't try, always trying to be, but I actually would disagree with that.
Very diplomatic.
And try, well, but you know, I'm old. I don't have time for these things.
Yeah. No, I yell at people.
Ooh, wow. Okay. I will be careful. I think it's actually important. I'm actually joking. If there are things that matters to me, I'd speak up, but usually not about logos and more other things that are more on my social, you know, that now I've evolved from the company that did, from having clients that were working for the richest of the richest. Now I'm completely changed and we are now onto more social, things that are more closer to my heart. Right. Anyway, look, it's been fantastic to have you with us. I know that we will hear more about you. Certainly, I want to collaborate more with you and to collaborate with you in future.
right. Yeah, I'd love that.
And honestly, we're going to stay on 30 minutes. It's well over 30 minutes. And I'm so glad it is, because I think with this episode, we couldn't go any shorter than this. You gave us so much. I can't thank you enough. Thank you.
Great. Yeah. And I was even able to squeeze in two brands, even though you said to only.
Yeah, you're right. That was
name
chicken.
One. Yeah.
Thank you. And stop.